The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to today's podcast, sponsored by Hillsdale College. All things Hillsdale at hillsdale.edu. I encourage you to take advantage of the many free online courses there. And, of course, to listen to the Hillsdale Dialogues, all of them at hughforhillsdale.com, or just Google Apple, iTunes, and Hillsdale. Good morning, Glory America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. I'm Hugh Hewlett, live in the West Coast studio of the Salem News Channel, the ReliefFactor.com studio. And I'm here. I'm a little bit voice challenged this morning. Bear with me. Yesterday was a very long day and a great day. First, we celebrated a couple of wonderful people, Dale and Ann Fowler at Chapman University School of Law. It's the Fowler School of Law. And a group of law school faculty, students, supporters of Chapman University, trustees, all gathered to honor Dale and Ann. And it was wonderful. And the guest of honor was former Attorney General Bill Barr, and he spoke about the law for an hour with Matt Parlow, former dean, now vice president at Chapman University. That's a fabulous event. Got to say hello to the AG, got to say hello to a lot of old friends. I'm leaving back for the Beltway on Saturday. I won't be back until next year, so I like that opportunity. From there, we went to the Nixon Library in Yorba Linda, where last night there was a gala dinner to unveil the opening of an exhibition of George W. Bush's quite remarkable paintings. Now, I've interviewed the former president about his painting before. His profiles and courage of the veterans, of the men and women he led in war, of the wounded and of the recovering, are deeply, deeply heartfelt, and they're very good. But the highlight of the evening was George W. Bush sat down with former National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien for about 45 minutes to an hour worth of conversation. And it is great to hear the moral clarity of George W. Bush about the terrorists. It is great to be reminded that we stand with Ukraine because Ukraine stands between a Russian dictator, who W. admitted changed before his eyes over the course of 8 years, and the invasion of Lithuania, Poland, NATO allies that will draw us into a war, that we've got to resupply weapons to Ukraine. It was great to hear the former president talk with moral clarity about the evil in the world, and for him to say, and I quote, "Iran is the most dangerous threat to the world today." That was bracing. So I get home late, and I got to do a little show prep, and I find in the Times of Israel a story on Anthony Blinken lecturing Israel about what they must and must not do in Gaza, how Israel's job number one in Gaza is protecting civilians. And then I read that Jake Sullivan has gone out and tried to walk back the president's comments because it's incoherent. They are losing the voters who support Israel. They're losing not only American Jews, but they are losing every American who supports Israel, and that includes me. They are the worst administration vis-a-vis Israel since Dwight Eisenhower. And I know that there are people, very smart people, like John Podhoretz, maybe I know the equal of any commentator out there. So he doesn't care. Biden can jaw all he wants, provided he keeps sending the weapons. But this is different. They're leaning on Israel. They're leaning on our ally. It is dangerous to be an ally of Joe Biden. It's great to be his enemy. He'll send you billions of dollars. W noted last night, billions of dollars in sanctions relief. The one policy that both W and Trump 100% agreed on is cut Iran's money off. They're the source of evil across the world. And those two guys are right, and Joe Biden is wrong, and Robert Gates is right that Joe Biden has always been wrong. But I remind you, this is what President Biden said on Saturday to Jonathan Capehart, cut number 28.
What is your red line with Prime Minister Netanyahu? Do you have a red line? For instance, would invasion of Rafah, which you have urged him not to do, would that be a red line?
It is a red line, but I'm never going to leave Israel. The defense of Israel is still critical. So there's no red line. I'm going to cut off all weapons so they don't have the Iron Dome to protect them. They don't have. But there's red lines that if he crosses and they can, he cannot have 30,000 more Palestinians dead.
All right. So he said, I want you to hear. He said, there is a red line and they can't go into Rafah. He said it. They've been leaning on Israel via anonymous leaks until yesterday. Then they realized, oh, man, this is not going well. People in America really like Israel, and they don't forget 10-7. So they sent Jake Sullivan, the National Security Advisor, out to try and clean up the damage yesterday. Cut number 26.
When it comes to the issue of the hostage talks, one of the things that I have found somewhat absent from the coverage is that what we are talking about in the first phase is women, elderly, and wounded civilians. Those who would like to see a ceasefire in Gaza. A ceasefire is on the table today for 6 weeks to be built on into something more enduring if Hamas would simply release women, wounded, and elderly. And the fact that they will not do so says a lot to me about Hamas's regard for innocent Palestinian civilians. The fact that they are holding on to those folks and refusing to release them and refusing to step up and say that we could get this ceasefire in place, which not only would bring calm to the fighting, but also would create an enormous opportunity to flow humanitarian assistance in much greater quantities, because a significant part of the problem on the humanitarian assistance front, as you know, has not just been getting trucks into Gaza, but getting trucks around Gaza, because it is difficult to move them in light of all of the fighting. Now, we've also encouraged Israel to stay at the table, stay engaged, because we believe that there still is scope for this deal to get done.
Stay at the table, stay engaged, even though they're trying to kill you and they won't let your people go. And by the way, there's a red line. But he goes on to talk about how the media is just getting this all wrong. Like we can't read or we can't hear. Again, let's play cut 28 first. This is President Biden on Saturday.
What is your red line with Prime Minister Netanyahu? Do you have a red line? For instance, would invasion of Rafah, which you have urged him not to do, would that be a red line?
It is a red line, but I'm never going to leave Israel. The defense of Israel is still critical. So there's no red line. I'm going to cut off all weapons so they don't have the Iron Dome to protect them. They don't have. But there's red lines that if he crosses and he cannot have 30,000 more Palestinians dead as a consequence of going out. There's other ways to deal, to get to deal with with the trauma caused by Hamas. It's like look, the first time I went over.
There is a red line, all right? So there is a red line. The president said it. Jake Sullivan then yesterday on Wednesday says this, cut 27.
When it comes to the issue of the hostage talks, one of the things that I have found somewhat absent from the coverage is that what we are talking about in the first phase is women, elderly, and wounded civilians. Those who would like to see a ceasefire in Gaza. A ceasefire is on the table today for 6 weeks to be built on into something more enduring if Hamas would simply release women, wounded, and elderly. And the fact that they will not do so says a lot to me about Hamas's regard for innocent Palestinian civilians. The fact that they are holding on to those folks and refusing to release them to step up and say that we could get this ceasefire in place, which not only would bring calm to the fighting, but also would create an enormous opportunity to flow humanitarian assistance in much greater quantities, because a significant part of the problem on the humanitarian assistance front, as you know, has not just been getting trucks into Gaza, but getting trucks around Gaza, because it is difficult to move them in light of all of the fighting.
All right, stop it right now. He went on to reject the idea. I'm reading now from the Times of Israel this morning, Jake Sullivan's summary of what he said. Jake Sullivan went on to reject the notion that the U.S. President Joe Biden had characterized an Israeli military operation in Rafah as a red line and pouring cold water on speculation that Washington is considering withholding security aid if the IDF moves into southern Gaza. That's all that has been leaked from the White House for 5 days. And now they figured out it's a political nightmare, and they're trying to back it up. They're trying to stop it. And Here's Anthony Blinken, cut number 25, on Andrea Mitchell yesterday. Again, the safe place for Biden, Team Biden, is on MSNBC. They talked to less than 1% of America. And at noon on MSNBC, they're talking about 0.1% of America. Cut number 25.
What we've seen in terms of food, as well as other supplies, going to your second part of your question, is, of course, the Israelis have been not only allowing food in, they have been working to make sure that it gets in and gets to people who need it. We've seen throughout this this process, first, the opening of Rafah back in October, after my first visit to Israel, many hours.
Oh, it's his visit to get it. Tony Blinken went to Israel and they opened up a crossing. This will not fly. And you need to call the White House. You need to call the White House. 202. I can't remember the White House number offhand. What is it, Dwayne? We'll find it for you. You need to call them and tell them to start supporting Israel and stop pounding on Israel. Israel is the victim here. Israel needs to go into Rafah. We need to give them the weapons. We need to shut up and stand by and support our longtime ally that was so savagely attacked by a terrorist organization that they now have cornered. We have to let Israel finish the job. And all this mishmash coming out of Biden, Blinken, and Sullivan is driving us crazy, and they're driving our Israeli allies even crazier. Job number one is not for Israel to protect civilians in Gaza. Job number one is get back the Israelis and the Americans that Joe Biden has forgotten, and to kill Hamas dead. Good morning, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. I got to tell you that I'm rarely at a loss for words, but I don't know how to describe the incoherence of Team Biden. I know that former Secretary of Defense Robert Gates warned us that Joe Biden has been wrong about every major national security issue for 40 years, and he told us that 10 years ago, and he hadn't gotten anything right since then. We've had the disastrous collapse in Afghanistan, the tragedy at Abbey Gate. George Bush referred to last night the plunging of millions of Afghanistani women and girls into darkness again, the brutality and corruption of the Taliban, and we just walked away. 2,500 troops, American troops, 2,500 NATO troops in Bagram could have kept that from happening. Maybe not over the whole country, but over Kabul. But Joe Biden's appeasement flopped. Then Joe Biden didn't do enough to stop Ukraine. In fact, the message Putin got from Afghanistan is go on in, and he did. Now Joe Biden is turning on Israel. And I want to play for you. This is Joe Biden on Saturday, cut 28.
What is your red line with Prime Minister Netanyahu? Do you have a red line? For instance, would invasion of Rafah, which you have urged him not to do, would that be a red line?
It is a red line, but I'm never going to leave Israel. The defense of Israel is still critical. So there's no red line. I'm going to cut off all weapons so they don't have the Iron Dome to protect them. They don't have. But there's red lines that if he crosses and they can, he cannot.
Stop right there. No, there's no red line where I'm going to walk away from defending Israel. But there's a red line if Israel defends itself. So Jake Sullivan gets up. The blowback from this is intense because America supports Israel and they know they've got to go into Rafah because Americans aren't stupid. You can't kill 90% of the cancer. And that's what they've done. They've killed 90% of Hamas. But the 10% is in Rafah and it will retake Gaza, reestablish control and do 10-7 again and again and again, as they have said. So Jake Sullivan gets up there yesterday, realizes the nightmare that they've started with the red line comment and says this, cut 29.
Do you have a red line? For instance, would invasion of Rafah, which you have urged him not to do, would that be a red line? And he answered definitively, it's a red line.
Well, I think you stopped conveniently after a single sentence, and it may not have exactly been
but
that sentence.
Israel, the defense of Israel.
And keep going. And if you read the full answer, and I'm just going to leave it at his answer, because I think he put it in his words, the way he wants to communicate this issue and the way that he's talking to the Israelis as well. And again, I just want to point out that the whole issue of the red line, as you all define it, is something that you guys like. It's almost become a bit of a national security parlor game. For the president, he's really focused on the substance.
That is so much. Gosh, that's bad. Do not hear what you hear, America. That's what Jake Sullivan is telling you. Play the president again. Cut 28.
What is your red line with Prime Minister Netanyahu? Do you have a red line? For instance, Would invasion of Rafah, which you have urged him not to do, would that be a red line?
It is a red line, but I'm never going to leave Israel. The defense of Israel is still critical. So there's no red line. I'm going to cut off all weapons so they don't have the Iron Dome to protect them. They don't have. But there's red lines that if he crosses and they can, he cannot have 30,000 more Palestinians dead as a consequence of going out. There's other ways to deal, to deal with with the trauma caused by Hamas. And it's like, look, the first time I went over, I sat with them and I sat with a war captain. I said, look, don't make the mistake America made. America made a mistake. We went after bin Laden until we got him. But we shouldn't have gone into Ukraine. I mean, we shouldn't have gone into the whole thing in Iraq and Afghanistan. It wasn't necessary. It wasn't necessary. It just caused more problems than the race that it's been cured.
All right. So I did not cut off his quote. You heard it. I heard it. The president says, yes, there is a red line. Yes, there are red lines. We won't, however, cut off Iron Dome. That's what he said. That's what he meant. I'm not putting words into his mouth. Good morning, glory, America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. I'm Hugh Hewitt in the Salem News Channel studios out west. I'm joined by Noah Rothman of National Review. Good morning, Noah.
Good morning, Hugh. Good to see you.
Good to see you. I need to play you two bits of tape. Jonathan Capehart and the president talking on Saturday. Jake Sullivan talking yesterday in the White House press corps. Here's cut number one, the president talking with Jonathan Capehart on Saturday. It is cut number 28.
What is your red line with Prime Minister Netanyahu? Do you have a red line? For instance, would invasion of Rafah, which you have urged him not to do, would that be a red line?
It is a red line, but I'm never going to leave Israel. The defense of Israel is still critical. So there's no red line. I'm going to cut off all weapons so they don't have the Iron Dome to protect them. They don't have. But there's red lines that if he crosses and he cannot have 30,000 more Palestinians dead as a consequence of going out. There's other ways to deal, to deal with. With the trauma caused by Hamas. And it's like, look, the first time I went over, I sat with them and I sat with a war captain. I said, look, don't make the mistake America made. America made a mistake. We went after bin Laden until we got him. But we shouldn't have gone into Ukraine. I mean, we shouldn't have gone into the whole thing in Iraq and Afghanistan. It wasn't necessary. It wasn't necessary. It just caused more problems in the race than it's been cured.
Okay, and then this is Jake Sullivan yesterday, Noah, cut number 29.
Do you have a red line? For instance, would invasion of Rafah, which you have urged him not to do, would that be a red line? And he answered definitively, it's a red line.
Well, I think you stopped conveniently after a single sentence, and it may not have exactly been that sentence.
Israel, the defense of Israel.
And keep going. And if you read the full answer, and I'm just going to leave it at his answer, because I think he put it in his words, the way he wants to communicate this issue and the way that he's talking to the Israelis as well. And again, I just want to point out that the whole issue of the red line, as you all define it, is something that you guys like. It's almost become a bit of a national security parlor game. For the president, he's really focused on the substance, on the policy, on his concern about the protection of civilians, and about Israel being able to sustain a campaign in a way that ultimately leads to an outcome in which the people of Israel are secure, Hamas is crushed, and there is a long-term solution to stability and peace in the region. He believes there is a path to do that, and that path does not lie in smashing into Rafah, where there are 1.3 million people, in the absence of a credible plan to deal with the population there. And again, as things stand today, we have not seen what that plan is.
Okay, Noah Rothman, can you please translate the president and his national security advisor in combo?
Well, Jake Sherman actually does deserve a lot of credit for full-throated moral clarity of the sort we just do not hear from this administration very often. He went in that press conference, went after Hamas pretty hard.
Jake Sullivan, not Jake Sherman. He works for
Jake Sullivan,
Punch Bowl. Jake Sullivan, yes. There you go.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Yeah, but I mean, he was criticizing the media in that as well. Criticized the media in that clip, criticized the media for not focusing on Hamas's complicity in this situation and being the obstacle to the release of hostages. Look inward, Mr. National Security Advisor. Where's the media getting its misconceptions from? It's getting it from the president and his subordinates. That sort of comments, and Joe Biden has been good for most of his administration avoiding his predecessors, his Democratic predecessors' biggest folly, which was drawing red lines that he was not prepared to follow through on and didn't actually mean. He did so in that conversation, and the administration at functionary levels has been walking it back over the course of the last 24, 48 hours. We've heard people in the national security establishment say, well, Israel can go into Rafah. We're not saying it can't go into Rafah, but they can't go in with the kind of force necessary to eliminate the remaining battalions there, which the United States estimates to be about 3,000 Hamas fighters. Now, if you think about that, there's 3,000 Hamas fighters roughly left in Rafah. That means that they have eliminated what the estimates were at the national security level in the United States at the start of this campaign, which was about 25,000 per estimates. That invalidates the notion that is being bandied about by Joe Biden and others that most of the casualties retailed by Hamas, by the Gaza Health Ministry, are civilian. Those numbers just don't make sense. And that actually comports with a tablet analysis that performed a regression analysis on Hamas's statistics and found them to be utterly laughable, untethered to anything resembling a statistical reality.
So but the president uses them. Fiction. Noah, the president and Jake Sullivan uses those terrible numbers from the Gaza Ministry of Health, which is a Hamas propaganda unit. There are surely innocent deaths. Innocent civilians have been killed. But the 30,000 number just made up. And it was a straight line progression until Hamas figured out they weren't fooling anyone.
Well, they are fooling them. They're fooling a lot of people, unfortunately, people who want to be fooled. The administration's problem is they're trying to have it both ways. They
I want to contrast it with last night. George W. Bush was in Yorba Linda, California, being interviewed by Robert O'Brien, the national security advisor under President Trump. And W., I miss his bluntness and his clarity. He said, Iran is the most dangerous country in the world right now. Just flat out, they're dangerous. And he said, I don't know why we're giving them $7 billion. That was in the past. I don't know why we're not treating them as the enemy. Clarity, clarity, clarity. Are we ever going to get that from these people, Noah?
No, no, we're not. The administration is desperately terrified of the prospect of victory. It just is. It needs Israel to win. It needs it to win with all due alacrity. But it can't risk, in its own mind, offending an unappeasable, very small contingent of Americans and people in Western Europe, for example, who don't want to see Israel win. This administration needs to put Iran in its place. Iran is responsible for Hamas as an Iranian proxy. The Shiite militias attacking American soldiers in Iraq and Syria are Iranian proxies. The Houthis are American proxies. They're busily attacking Americans directly, American interests indirectly, and the symbols of American hegemony. And the administration just kind of wants it to go away without doing the things you need to do in order to communicate to an adversary that they're outclassed and that the costs of their destabilizing activity will be higher than the benefits. The administration just simply cannot commit itself to that kind of course for fear of offending people.
Yeah, I would really love to hear a reporter ask Jake Sullivan or Admiral Kirby, but preferably Jake Sullivan, can you please tell us how many people died in Mosul in the effort to extirpate ISIS from Mosul? How many buildings were destroyed? What part did America play in that? Why were we silent during Assad's genocide? This administration is anti-Israel. They think they're anti-Netanyahu, but it's 90% of Israel supports the Netanyahu policies, even though Netanyahu is last in the polls. And I realize that, and I know he's got very little chance of surviving the next election, and it will be Benny Gantz or somebody else, maybe Naftali Bennett, maybe some we don't know yet. But the idea that Netanyahu is driving this as opposed to Israel is simply wrong, and it suggests to me that this administration doesn't know its rear end from its nose.
Yeah, I wouldn't go so far as to say anti-Israel, because the argument against it is that in material terms and in behind the scenes, the administration has supported Israel's objectives in ways and rhetorically at the outset of this conflict in ways that we haven't seen from other administrations, Republican administrations and Democratic alike. And I'm sensitive to that argument. I don't think it's wholly unfounded. But at the same time, I don't think you can say what we're seeing in public now is just all kabuki theater. The administration is deeply conflicted over allowing Israel the kind of victory that it needs politically. The administration needs Israel to win. And I think they are genuinely internally conflicted over that. They should not be, obviously. And the administration clearly has its priorities conflicted with what it believes to be its domestic priorities.
All right, now,
but
now,
listen, if this war is continuing into the summer, that's a real political headache for this administration. It needs to commit to Israeli victory now or suffer the consequences later.
Yeah, my podcasts include Getting Hammered with Mary Catherine and Vic, and Pod Horitz and Greenwald and Matt Continetti and Christine Rosen, and usually they'll have Seth on. And John Podhoretz and Abe Greenwald have been arguing for months now whether or not Joe Biden's going to screw Israel. And John Podhoretz says he talks tough, but he gives us all the weapons. And Abe says, no, you're going to screw Israel. Who are you with, Noah?
I've been with Abe for a long time.
You and me both. That's three.
And not because John is wrong. John's not wrong. He's giving due credit to actual events on the ground. He's crediting that over rhetoric. And that's really valuable. But the rhetoric really does matter. And the rhetoric is what the administration wants us to see. Who are we to deny them what they want us to acknowledge, which is their own hostility towards Israel's interests?
Now, the rhetoric is damaging in that it encourages the world to do things like impose boycotts on Israel, not sell Israel what they need, not play games with Israel, to try and cast Israel as a pariah state when they are the victim. It's deeply damaging. And last word to you, Noah. Do you agree with that? We've got about 30 seconds. You think the rhetoric is damaging to Israel?
It is. It's designed to be. What else could it be? The administration wants to cast Israel as having gone beyond, above and beyond what it should be doing here, as though any other state would accept these terms and conditions that have been imposed on it by Hamas.
I agree.
It's quite ridiculous. The administration needs to join the side that it is on.
We will get John over to the right side of this issue sooner rather than later. Go Abe, go Noah, and go America to the next segment of today's Hugh Hewitt Show. Thank you, Noah Rothman. Follow him on X at Noah C. Rothman.
Do you have a red line? For instance, would invasion of Rafah, which you have urged him not to do, would that be a red line? And he answered definitively, it's a red line.
Well, I think you stopped conveniently after a single sentence, and it may not have exactly been that sentence.
Israel, the defense of Israel.
And keep going. And if you read the full answer, and I'm just going to leave it at his answer because I think he put it in his words.
Just leave it there. I am Hugh Hewitt. I am joined by Josh Kroshauer of Jewish Insider. And Josh, I played the president's statements earlier many times to Jonathan Capehart. I played Jake Sullivan's statements yesterday. They do not add up. The president said there are red lines. Jake Sullivan said, oh, that's all a figment in your imagination. What is going on?
Hugh, politics is going on. The White House is terrified of its left-wing base. You could see that in the State of the Union address where there was comparatively a lot more focus from Biden on tut-tutting the Israelis for not being attentive enough to humanitarian concerns in Gaza, and not any mention of the war they're fighting against Hamas and the existential threat that Israel faces. That's a shift from what, rhetorically at least, from what we heard in previous months and at the beginning of the aftermath of October 7th. So there's this incoherence in policy, but in my view, Hugh, and we've been reporting on this extensively at JI, it stems from politics. They saw the Michigan results. They're worried about Dearborn. They're worried about, you know, it's not just the hard left. There are a lot of progressives in their caucus. I'd say about, you know, maybe a quarter of the Senate Democrats, a quarter of House Democrats that want to condition aid to Israel, that are screaming from the rooftops. And their outspokenness is scaring the, you know, in terms of re-election, they don't want to have their coalition fall apart. So they're,
but you know, Washington State also voted. Minnesota and Washington State voted 20% against Joe Biden with no opposition. So I would be scared too. On the other hand, American Jewish voters are overwhelmingly pro-Israel, and they are mostly Democratic. I have never seen such an effort to drive them into the hands of the Republicans, Josh, because we are pro-Israel. I want Ambassador Friedman back. I want Mike Pompeo back. I want the Abraham Accords back. I want Trump back, because you got to go into Rafah. It's just insane to say there's a red line around Rafah. That it's a malignancy.
Well, by the way, Hugh, it's fascinating to watch. I said on Twitter yesterday, you almost have to like parse with the most like intense focus on what they're saying on a daily basis, because it shifts and the language shifts. Yesterday, you played the Jake Sullivan clip. There was a big Politico story that basically said, yeah, actually, we want the Israelis to go into Rafah and take out Hamas, as long as they don't do it on a large scale invasion, as long as it's not too big, right? I mean, it becomes almost absurd to the point where the U.S. is micromanaging what Israel can do for political purposes domestically, and they're not. And I think it's a big mistake politically for them. I think they're very short-sighted, Hugh.
I agree
politically, because the majority of the American public, you see this in poll after poll, is pro-Israel. We're moving into the general election phase of the election. You see someone like John Fetterman in a battleground state like Pennsylvania, who has seen his approval ratings go up, even among Democrats, by taking a very strong pro-Israel stance. So the notion that they're not showing strength. Biden is looking weak by being held hostage, literally, to a faction of his party that is vocally anti-Israel.
Well, I think he's actually confused, Josh, when he did the Capehart interview. I know, Jonathan, you do, too. He's a friend of mine. He's a good interviewer. He gave him a couple of chances. He cannot not step on the rake. Unless it's a prepared text, he always steps on the rake. And I don't know how often you can send Jake Sullivan out to do cleanup on aisle three without the country concluding Joe Biden doesn't know what he's talking about.
Yes, but I think a lot of Israelis would point to the Biden speech after October 7th, his visit to Israel, and the rhetoric that the president used then, and they would like to see more of that Biden. Biden certainly has shown that he can speak with some moral clarity to what's happening, the need to defeat Hamas. I think you made the comparison to bin Laden, Hugh, that it would be like if the U.S., you know, was taking out most of Al-Qaeda but didn't want to go after bin Laden. I mean, that would be the political equivalent in Israel, not finishing the job in Rafah, where a lot of the most high-level leadership, military leadership for Hamas is hold in Rafah right now.
Let me close with this, Josh. I want to know the level of interest. Has Jewish Insider experienced an ongoing, consistent rise in the level of interest? The way that I'm checking the Times of Israel five times a day, has that happened at Jewish Insider?
Yeah, I mean, look, the story of what's going on in Israel, of anti-Semitism, rising anti-Semitism at home, that is the national story right now. It's not just the JI story. It's a story everywhere, and we've been covering it on a day-to-day basis. So, yeah, that is our focus, and it's increasingly the focus of a lot of the world.
Were you surprised that the president did not bring up American anti-Semitism in his State of the Union?
I was. And I think that was a missed opportunity. There were hostages, you know, families of hostages. There were hostages that had been released since October 7th that were in attendance at the State of the Union. We are seeing, it's been well documented by numerous organizations, a historic level, at least in my memory, of anti-Semitism in the United States on college campuses. It wasn't only, I think, a challenge when he was tutting Israel and sort of also not mentioning what is a surge right now in the country.
Josh, always good to talk to you. Follow Josh on X at Josh Kroshauer. Welcome back, America. I'm joined by Jim Talent, former senator from Missouri. Good morning, Senator Talent. How are you?
Doing great, you.
Great. Senator, I want to read you a paragraph from my new Fox News column and get your reaction. I've long argued for a veteran as Trump's running mate, like Senator Tom Cotton, Joni Ernst, or J.D. Vance, or former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. There are other names, such as Congresswoman Elise Stefanik, former National Security Advisor Ambassador Robert O'Brien, parens, the LDS vote in Arizona and Nevada matter, close parens. But the basic idea and imperative are obvious. The former president's first big announcement should crush, via comparison, the often giggling and usually incoherent vice president. What do you think of my list? What do you think of my argument?
I like all the names on it. I mean, I think for a vice presidential candidate, the number one thing is a good communicator, and then you want balance on the ticket. And once a President Trump is sure about who he wants, I agree with you. I don't see any reason to delay the announcement. But if he's not certain, I want him to be certain first. It's very important. There's a lot of time between now and the convention. So I agree with the thrust of what you're saying, but I don't want him to rush to an announcement.
Generally, I've never thought vice presidents matter much, but the contrast that's going to, because we're really voting for Kamala Harris. I'm sure you watched the State of the Union. I don't think Joe Biden can get five more years out of that energy level. What do you think?
Hugh, it's so hard to predict. I mean, but it's definitely a risk. And so I agree. I think it's a bigger issue in this election than usually, but it's very important to get a good communicator. We need people who can say how good things were under Trump how bad they are now and how good things are going to be again if President Trump gets elected. And that's got to be the main message of the campaign, and we need people who can carry it. And the two most important people are the nominee and the vice presidential nominee.
You know, I had a front row center seat last night for O'Brien interviewing George W. Bush was at the Nixon Library, and it was wonderful to have a direct, pointed, Iran is the focus of evil in the world right now, the most dangerous state in the world, and we have to stand with Israel. I mean, he was just so direct and blunt. It was refreshing. You think we're ever going to get back to where candidates just speak directly to these issues?
Yeah, I actually think in today's world, especially that's very important. I think a lot of people are picking up on that. And it's most important because the trust level for government and institutions in general has sunk so low that it's really important to be clear about what you're saying. And then you have a hope that people may actually think you're being sincere. So, I agree. And I love what he's
That leads me to the main issue. On Saturday, Joe Biden said there's a red line around Rafah. Yesterday, Jake Sullivan told the media, you're making too much of that. You're just turning that into a parlor game. I heard him say red line twice, and then Jake Sullivan says, pay no attention. What is going on over there?
Well, I think I know what's going on. I mean, the president wanted to say that Israel can get Hamas, but they can't get Hamas in Rafah, which is, unfortunately for him, where Hamas is at.
Yeah.
And his problem is he's trying to please two constituencies. Yeah, he's trying to please two constituencies in his party, the people who want Israel to win and the people who want Israel to lose. And since those two constituencies have irreconcilable goals, the administration has lapsed into incoherence, which, by the way, is alienating everybody.
I think he's in danger of losing not only Jewish Americans, but people like you and me who are longstanding friends of Israel, have got nothing Jewish about us, but we like democracies and we like allies and we don't like to undercut them. I know he's sending weapons, but I think the rhetoric is damaging, Jim Talent. Do you agree with me, Senator?
Yes, because what Israel needs primarily is not weapons. What Israel has needed from the beginning is diplomatic and narrative support, particularly in international forums. The failure to give it you risks prolonging the war because, and Dr. Oren has said this so eloquently, Hamas and Hezbollah are both hoping that international pressure and pressure from the United States will force Israel to back off. If they knew that wasn't going to happen, there would at least be a chance that they would seek a way to end this consistent with Israeli security and return of the hostages. Prolonging the war.
Yes. Could he not just say, we are with Israel. Israel has to destroy Hamas. We are certain that Israel will do it as carefully as it can be done. But we are with them and we will provide them, but we know that they will act responsibly. Can't he just say that?
Yes, that's what he ought to say. I think there's two reasons. One is that he's not. One is the political problem that you mentioned. And the other is because, and this is a holdover from the Obama administration, and I don't know if you asked President Bush about this, they actually think that you can construct a security arrangement in the Middle East that will be stable around a partnership with Iran.
Oh, O'Brien brought that up, fantasy. And W just laughed at the idea that we just gave him $7 billion. He can't believe it. It was so clear. Jim Talent can be found on X at the very hard-to-remember Jim Talent handle. Jim Talent. Want to remind everyone, a great sponsor of the program is MyPhDWeightLoss.com. Generalissimo went on that program more than a year ago, lost 50 pounds. He's kept it off. And stress eating is not allowed, I don't believe, even though we're under a lot of...
Tempted to this week, aren't we?
Everybody is. But we don't... I'm sure they give you tricks of the trade to combat that, because that's one of the habits. You broke that habit. You're not going by Del Taco or Taco Bell.
Have not. No.
You haven't relapsed.
Have not relapsed.
And that is and it's healthy, it's wise, it's productive.
864-644-1900.
That's
864-644-1900.
Morning, Glory America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. I'm Hugh Hewitt in the West Coast studio of the Salem News Channel. I'm so glad to have Matt Dolan back with me. State Senator Matt Dolan is on the ballot Tuesday as the Ohio Senate race for the GOP nomination comes down to the wire. Early voting, I think, is still going on, but the real vote is Tuesday, the last chance to vote. Matt Dolan, welcome back. It's good to have you. How's it look?
Thanks, Hugh. Thank you very much for having me. It looks great. We're all over the state. I'm in Hamilton County this morning. Work our way all the way up to Jogga by the end of the day. Look, my message is resonating. It's the idea of we need conservatives who actually get results that impact Ohioans' lives in a positive way each and every day. And that's what I think people are starving for. We got to get things done in Washington. Joe Biden, Sherrod Brown, taking this country off the rails. We need to come back on the rails. The only way we do that is we have to execute on what we believe in.
Now, Matt Dolan, Rob Portman, who was my favorite senator and the senator who probably voted exactly as I would have voted, endorsed you last week. That's a big lift. Are you out campaigning with Rob Portman this weekend, or is it all mail and direct ads at this point?
Well, Hugh, thank you for that. Yeah, both Rob and Jane campaigned with me yesterday. So we had a number of great events, and the enthusiasm for Rob's endorsement of me, you could feel it. But it is a reality that this is about executing on Republican principles and getting a conservative agenda. And I think when Rob Portman looked at all three of us, and by the way, all three of us wanted Rob Portman's endorsement, despite what you might hear today, Rob looked at me and said, here's a guy who's actually put conservative principles into place. And as a result, I've gotten lower taxes, less regulations, universal school choice. We support our police. We save women's sports. These are the things that I've actually done that my opponents can't point to. And that's what we need to go to Washington and get done. We need to remove Sherrod Brown and actually put conservative principles into place so America gets stronger.
Now, you're in Hamilton, Ohio, near Miami of Ohio, where my son went. I'm on WMOH down there. I'm also on in Dayton and in Columbus, and I'm on in Cleveland and Youngstown and Toledo. I cover the entire Buckeye State, my home state. What issues are common to I call it the seven states of Ohio, because there are really seven states in Ohio if you count up the various, you know, the Steel Valley or the farming communities of northwestern Ohio or Cincinnati down on the river. What binds all of those communities together in terms of priority, Matt Dolan?
Yeah, like I said before, I think your numbers in Cleveland area are higher just because my sister's family listens to you.
Joan. Love her. Yep.
Yep. So Ohio is a great state. It is unique and diverse in a lot of different areas. But over the last year, as campaigning for it, it is uniform in the idea that we need to secure and seal our border. That we do not have a sovereign nation unless we have a strong border. That is uniform throughout. The idea that families are struggling because of what's coming from Washington. It costs $11,000 more per family for household goods since Joe Biden came into office. And Sherrod Brown has done nothing to stop that. We have high inflation. We have high gas prices. Our interest rates are high. We have an economy that is trying to be forced by the administration to change our behavior rather than letting free markets decide. We need to have energy independence. Ohio, particularly in the southeast, Mahoning Valley and south, you know, we could have an energy dominant economy and an energy dominant production if we just put the right policies and people in place. So They're diverse in their topography. They're diverse in their economics, but they're strong together. We need a strong border and we need a stronger economy.
Now, Senator Dolan, my great grandfather owned the Hotel Ashtabula. It is now a drug rehab center. All four of my grandparents, born, raised, lived, died, buried in Ashtabula, fentanyl capital. It's just incredible what's happened to Ashtabula, and Warren's not much better. It's been rampaged through by fentanyl. What will you do as a United States senator if you get the nomination and can beat Sherrod Brown to deal with this deadly pandemic? Rob Portman spent a lot of time on this, but there's a lot more to be done.
Yes. So there's so much packed into that question. So we need to spend time on the abuse side, the supply side, make sure we get people not addicted. And if they are addicted, let's get them off. But let's talk about the supply side. Let's make sure we secure and seal our border, temporarily close the border to immigration so we can get border security, we can get walls, we can get technology. But as it relates to fentanyl, we need to do two dramatic things because this is a crisis. We need to go to Mexico City and tell the Mexican government that if you don't join with us to destroy the cartels, we're going to revisit the aid and trade we provide for your country. And second, and I'm the only one talking like this, and I'm the only one that's done anything. I voted in Ohio, and I want to bring it to Washington, that fentanyl needs to be declared a weapons of mass destruction.
Oh.
Hugh, that's not the campaign talk. That allows the United States government to stop ships and planes coming into Mexico originating in China, because that's where the ingredients, the precursors, are started from and go into Mexico, and then the cartels mix it into fentanyl, into a pill, everyday pills that make its way illegally across the border into Warren, into Ashtabula, throughout the entire state of Ohio. And that's why they are weapons. If these were bombs, Hugh, no one would question it. These are acting as bombs because they're killing Ohioans. So now, we need this is a crisis. We need to act like it.
I'm so glad to hear you say that. Now, I stay neutral in primaries, but Ohio is very close to my heart. My youngest son's middle name is Ohio. And I noted a story that Sherrod Brown is putting money into, is it Bernie's campaign? I hate when they do this. I just saw Adam Schiff get Steve Garvey on the ballot in order not have to face Katie Porter. Is that going on in Ohio?
Yeah, well, I think it's pretty clear it is. What I know this is, I am Chuck Schumer's, Sherrod Brown's, and the Senate Democrats' worst nightmare, because I'm a conservative who's gotten results that help Ohioans. That if I am the nominee, Sherrod Brown's liberal record, the idea he wants to raise taxes, he wants late-term abortions, he wants to end the filibuster, these are just multiple ways that Sherrod Brown's record will be exposed. I represent Ohio. I've done things for Ohio that help all Ohioans. So, yeah, I believe the Senate Democrats are doing everything they can to put Bernie on the ballot because they know he's the most vulnerable, that they can beat Bernie. You put me on the ballot and Sherrod Brown's going to be retired.
Now, you are a prosecutor, or you were a prosecutor in Geauga County. I'm not sure what that means. I would vacation in Geauga County, but what you learned there, what do you make of the Soros prosecutors? And I don't know if they're popping up in Ohio, but I think they're the problem.
Yeah. So when you work in the prosecutor's office, it's sometimes not exactly what happens in the courtroom. It's what happens in preparing a case and working hand in glove with the law enforcement officers. So I understand what the difficulties and the dangers that law enforcement have when they're the ones, when a crime has occurred, they're the ones running towards it. They're the ones trying to solve it. And so I have developed a great relationship with law enforcement over my career that started not just as a prosecutor, but as assistant attorney general. And so understanding that we need to step up and, you know, back the blue. That can't be just a slogan. It has to be real. And I've done it. I've done it by in terms of working with them. I've done it in terms of supporting them. And Hugh, you know, in this great state of Ohio, I've had 20 Republican sheriffs endorse my race for U.S. Senate because they know when I say I'm going to fight for them, they know I've done it and I'll do it again in Washington.
I want to also compliment you. You delivered school choice for the Buckeye State. Let's close on that. What's the bill? How's it working? Because it's got to work in Ohio or people are going to hold it against all the other school choice campaigns in the country.
Yeah, it's going to work. And it is helping kids all around the state to get the education they need. Now, sometimes I'll walk out on you a little bit, but our fiscal year doesn't always match up with the school year. So we are seeing an uptick in this school year, but I think you're going to really see it next school year when people are more aware that the choice is available for them. And obviously the ultimate goal is to get kids educated, but maybe the public schools will finally wake up and say, you're supposed to be educating kids, not indoctrinating the kids and not failing the kids. So I think Ohio is going to become the poster child for, we just want our children to get educated. We're not going to stress out where it happens. We just need them to get educated in the proper way and be prepared in tomorrow's economy.
Senator Dolan, what's the website? I'm sure they'll have information on where to vote there. What's the Matt Dolan for Senate website?
Appreciate you. Dolan for Ohio, Dolan, F-O-R, Ohio. And I would be honored to have your vote this Tuesday.
Thank you for joining me, Senator. I'll talk to you after the election, come whatever comes. It's always good to talk to a Dolan. Say hi to Joan for me. Great. It's great to see Matt Dolan. Joan, his sister, and I have done a lot of pro-life stuff together in Ohio over the years. And that's just in the spirit of full disclosure. I am in Switzerland. But Joan and I are pals, and her school's a wonderful school. So go Ohio. I'll come right back, America. Stay tuned. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Pat Harrigan is running for Congress in the 10th Congressional District of North Carolina, which is now home to Patrick McHenry, who's retiring. But we can't get enough Green Berets in Congress, and Pat Harrigan is back. Good morning, Pat. Welcome back to the Hugh Hewitt Show. Congratulations on your primary win. That was close.
Hugh, thanks so much. I really appreciate it. It's great to be back. And yes, we need more Green Berets in Washington.
Yeah, let's start with the website. Where do people go, whether they're listening in North Carolina or they want to support one of their own in the Army or the Green Berets or the Special Forces? How do they find Pat Harrigan's campaign website?
Well, they can go to harriganforcongress.com. That's H-A-R-R-I-G-A-N, like the old Yankee Doodle Dandy jingle. And you can volunteer, you can donate, contribute. You can see where we stand on all of the issues. You can reach out, ask us questions. Any type of interaction, we just love to have.
So, Pat, you were on 2 years ago when you made your first run. I always like it when people come back right again and get back on the horse. This time the district is much better. Tell us about where the district is, and then give us the Pat Harrigan bio for people who have joined the audience since you first appeared a couple of years ago.
Sure thing, Hugh. So the 10th District of North Carolina starts north of Charlotte in Mooresville, kind of goes out to the west, covers Lincolnton and Hickory, and then kind of goes up to the northeast all the way up through Forsyth County, Winston-Salem. So it's actually a fairly sizable district, includes five counties in North Carolina, a little over 750,000 people, and really kind of represents the western heart of North Carolina. It's an awesome district, and you know, my background is I came out of West Point, went into the Special Forces as a Green Beret, served two tours in Afghanistan, got out of the military. My wife and I started a small company out of our double-wide trailer outside of Fort Bragg, North Carolina. We've grown that since over the last 8 years to about 120,000 square foot facility. Just west of Hickory, we've got about 60 employees now, all American manufacturing, and we're in the firearms industry, so munitions and optics manufacturing. It's been a pretty cool journey for us.
Now, you've been endorsed by Michael Waltz, for whom my son works. I always have to mention that. I know the Cotton's on your team. I think Pompeo's on your team. All the Army guys are. But I want to tell you something you might not know. My son-in-law's in-laws live in Winston-Salem, and they didn't know that I'd had you on the phone. They didn't hear me 2 years ago when we were talking, and they didn't know anything about you.
Yeah.
They voted for you based on the material you sent them at their home. So that is really rare. It doesn't work anymore, right? People do social media. Who's doing your mail, and who came up with the messaging? Because it's working.
You know, I'll tell you what. I think that people appreciate a good story, and people appreciate leaders of character. I think that anytime that you can get that type of material in front of them, whether it's on the radio, whether it's on television, whether it's by direct mail, I think people want to see that type of positivity. They want to see that type of hope and inspiration. And you know, they just kind of shy away from negativity. There's just so much of it in our culture these days. So if you can stay positive, I actually don't think it really matters what type of media or medium you communicate on. I think people are dying for it. And I'm glad to hear that this morning, Hugh. That's
now, Pat, what I like is whether it's Gallagher, who's going to retire, and I understand why. Family and comes first when you're Mike, and I get that. He's done his time. I love having on Waltz. I love having on Dan Crenshaw. I love talking to Banks, who's a Navy guy. I love talking to Cotton. I just think we need more veterans just across the board. And the reason for that is sobriety. And by that, I mean, not that they never have a beer, but that they're serious of purpose. And I just don't see that in American politics much. Do you?
Yeah, I think that the data shows that we don't see it in American politics much anymore. Now, at this point in time, you know, 19% of our Congress are veterans. And historically, it's been 50 to 70%. And so I think if you look out across a lot of the ills that our nation has, the world is on fire right now due to a significant lack of American leadership. I think that you can point a straight line right back into Congress and say our Congress is not prepared. They do not have the requisite experience to understand the consequences of the decisions that they are making because they don't have military experience. I think it's critically important to the future of this nation that we get more veterans in Congress. So couldn't agree with you more, Hugh.
Now, Dan Harrigan, one of the other things I want to bring up is President Biden. On the State of the Union address last week, he did not mention the Abbey Gate 13. One of the Gold Star Fathers shouted out Abbey Gate. He was arrested, by the way, which is astonishing to me. And he did not mention the three soldiers who were killed by the drone that was launched by the Iranian proxy. What is it with the president not recognizing our fallen warriors?
You know, I think it's just an overall unwillingness of the president to admit any faults, right? I mean, if you listen to the State of the Union, it was a highly vitriolic speech. It was something that was very amped up. It was, you know, quite frankly, angry. And it talked very much from a one-sided, you know, far left liberal perspective that he wants to move the country in that direction. And I don't think that we can actually reconcile, and we cannot come together until we talk about and admit some of the failures and missteps that we've taken as a nation, right? I mean, the State of the Union addresses, they should be unifying. They should be talking to all Americans about the direction that we're hopefully moving forward in. And unfortunately, I think a lot of Americans took from the State of the Union that we're regressing. We're still moving backwards, and we're becoming more and more divisive. And that starts at the very top with our leadership. And that's very, very frustrating.
I was with President George W. Bush last night. He was doing an event at the Nixon Library, being interviewed by National Security Advisor O'Brien. And he hearkened back to when he had to give speeches in the aftermath of 9/11, what he wanted to communicate. His State of the Union in 2002 was the opposite of Joe Biden's State of the Union in 2024. It was come together, let's protect the country against all threats, foreign and domestic. What issue dominates most when someone says that, protect the union against all enemies, foreign and domestic? What comes to mind in the minds of the North Carolina voters that you seek to represent?
Well, without a doubt, it starts right here at home. And it's certainly the disaster that we have down at our southern border due to President Biden's immigration policy. I mean, there is very clear consensus here in the 10th District of North Carolina, although we're not a border state. It is now said that every state is a border state, and the folks of the 10th District fully understand the consequences that are you know, just absolutely porous southern border is posing. I mean, we have significant drug threats, fentanyl overdoses in the 10th District. I mean, we just had a shooting in Iredell County that was drug related this past weekend, and you know, multiple people died. And again, this is because of the negative influence that's allowed to come into this country across our southern border. And that's not even talking about, you know, the national security consequences that we have with respect to an open southern border where we do not know who's coming into this country or for what purpose. That is most certainly can be concluded is averse to ours. And so the southern border has got to get fixed. We have to reinstate President Trump's Remain in Mexico policy. We have to finish his wall. We have to deport illegals who have broken our laws. It really is that simple. That is the number one priority for the people of the 10th District.
Now, we've got a bunch of SEALs in Congress, like we've got Dan Crenshaw and Ryan Zinke and Derek Van Orden, a bunch of special operators from the Navy. We've only got Waltz. So I just want to know, is there going to be like a flag football game if we get, there's another Green Beret run, and we might get up to 3-3. What do you think?
Well, you know, I'll tell you what, we have Keith Self down in Texas too, and people overlook him. He's new. We're up to 2 Green Berets, and I'll be the third. And it's good because we got to start pushing back against these Navy SEALs. You know, they're just pervasive all throughout Congress, and you know, they walk around with.
But you know, the guy who brought you to my attention first was General Mel Spies, and he said you got to get the Harrigan guy on the air. And so the Marines are there too. So just don't overlook the Marines. Pat Harrigan, how much money do you have to raise for it? I mean, the Democrats. It's Patrick McHenry is retiring. It's the only shot they get at this seat. They're going to throw a lot at it.
Yes, they are going to throw a lot at it. They really don't like that, you know, I manufacture AR-15s for a living.
Yeah.
And so we're targeting $1 million between now and November election. We're in an R+18 district. So, you know, we're a safe, solid Republican seat. We are not going to take anything for granted. You know, a good mentor of mine said you either run unopposed or you run scared. We are not unopposed. And so we're going to run this thing as hard as we possibly can, take nothing for granted. We will never be outworked. And so anything that anybody could do for our campaign.
You know, I got to ask you one more question. You're dealing with a civilian.
Sure.
I don't know anything about weapons. No one's allowed. My brother-in-law is retired Marine, won't even let me go to the range because he's afraid I'll shoot my foot off because I'm so uncoordinated. My question is, when you hear the debate about guns in the United States, do you shake your head over like the bump stock argument at the Supreme Court? Are civilians or non-firearms experts just stupid? I think they are.
You know, unfortunately, a lot of people really don't fully understand what they're talking about, and they reiterate talking points that are given on television by folks who are, frankly, quite uninformed about our industry, our business, or about the mechanics of how firearms actually work or our laws. And so, yes, unfortunately, most of the time I do end up just shaking my head and go back to Ronald Reagan. You know, the other side just knows so much that isn't so.
Yeah, it's like when I'm on special report and someone's talking about the Supreme Court, which I've been teaching con law for 25 years, I lose it. I just sometimes throw up my head that that's the worst thing I've ever heard. It must be the same way for a guy who knows weaponry. Pat, I want you to keep coming back. And once again, website, patharrigan.com.
PatHarrigan.com. And Hugh, thank you so much for the opportunity today. It's great to see you again.
Do you want to do armed services, intel, foreign affairs? What do you want to do when you get there?
Yeah, absolutely. I think armed services, intel is a very natural fit for me. I think it best serves the people of the 10th District with respect to either our foreign policy or making sure that our military is strong. Certainly as our world is on fire due to a lack of American leadership, I think that we need to put specific focus towards our foreign policy and very specific focus towards the strength of our military, because that's how we're going to get through the next decade.
Good luck in that. Keep the faith and keep moving forward. DanHarrigan.com. Go and support him, America. Find out. Pat Harrigan. Did I say Dan? That was yesterday. PatHarrigan.com.
That's all right, you. You're going to make me confused with those seals.
PatHarrigan.com. Go and check it out. One more thing. Don't forget our friends at Alliance Defending Freedom. That's what I do. I do the con law stuff. He fights the wars. Alliance Defending Freedom saves your freedoms from lefties in court, and Harrigan and his buddies fight the wars. But you can help Alliance Defending Freedom today by making a contribution at the website at hughhewitt.com. Wait one beat, two beat, and the banner appears at the top. Keep them in the game. I know you've been planning on doing it. You've been thinking, I can do 10, I can do 20, I can do $25, maybe do 100. Whatever you can do, please go right now to QQIT.com and make that donation. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, Alliance Defending Freedom. Of course, great sponsor of our program. And you can support Alliance Defending Freedom today by heading over to HughHewitt.com. The banner comes up at the top. Alliance Defending Freedom has won 15 Supreme Court cases, 15 in the last 20 years. That's just a record no one else does. The ACLU can't do that. No one else can do that. But the Alliance Defending Freedom does it for people of faith, people who want to speak out, people who want to assemble legally. So go to the banner at the top of HughHewitt.com. I'm now joined by Catherine Templeton, whom I've never met, but is going to be my new favorite congresswoman once she beats Nancy Mace, because the knucklehead caucus needs to be thrown out of Congress. And Catherine, you're going to do that. I've had it with Nancy Mace, and we already got rid of Matt Rosendale and Ken Buck. Now you're going to try and retire Nancy Mace. How's it going?
It's amazing. You know, the first day of our launch, we raised $100,000. Which is really nice, given that the last thing I last time I was in government was about, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago. So out of the gate, our district is excited. Everywhere I go, there's momentum. People, the grassroots, the people who actually matter, right? The voters want to know how they can help.
Well, tell me something, Catherine. Do they know how Nancy Mace screwed up the GOP caucus? I mean, Kevin McCarthy is a very dear friend of mine. So I've got blood. I've got blood in this game. Skin in this game. I really am mad at her because she's just dummy. Do people know that in the first district of South Carolina?
I think that it's a little bit of inside baseball, but I'll tell you what they do know. They do know that the day that she voted with the Democratic minority and broke the majority, that she broke her promises here. I mean, there was a huge race when she ran, and the impetus of the race and the reason they elected her is because they didn't want a Democrat. You know, we got a slim majority. We sent her up there to make sure we had a majority, and then she broke it herself. We might as well have hired a Democrat for the job. So that's what people know. We have a wonderful Jewish population here, and they watched Nancy Mace break the Republic in October, and then 3-4 days later, Hamas attacks Israel, and we just watched because we were legally not able to do much of anything. And China watched us watch, right? So you can't represent us and break the Republic.
I'm so glad to hear that. I'm sure she's got money because incumbents have money. How much do you have to raise, and what's the website that people go to, Catherine?
Thank you for asking that. It is templetonforcongress.com. And I think we need to raise about $1 million. And the reason it's $1 million is because, you know, the last time I represented this district as their labor secretary, I worked for Nikki Haley for 4 years. And she had me as the labor secretary, as the environmental chief, as the public health director. I mean, we had everything from Ebola to the Savannah River site. And we had a couple of really public fights with the Obama-Biden administration, up to the Supreme Court and back a few times. I got personally sued by the AFL-CIO, the ACLU. They remember that, but it was almost a decade ago, right? And they know that I brought tens of thousands of jobs and over $1 billion in investment to this district. But we've got to remind them with a marketing campaign. We don't have to spend money beating up Nancy. We have to spend money getting my positive discipline message out of serious results.
Well, you got to go find the independents and people who get to vote in it. Tell me something about when the primary is and what the polls show right now. Beating an incumbent is hard, even if it's a knucklehead like Nancy Mace. But what do the polls show, and when is the election?
The election is in about 90 days, so June 11th. The polls show that we can beat her. We can beat her handily. And it's because she's flip-flopped for fame so many times. And I know that sounds like a kitsy tagline. It is. My husband said it by accident, and I haven't let go of it. We've watched her be on both sides of immigration, both sides of the life issue, both sides of President Trump. And so we just don't trust her. And the polls show that.
Trust matters so much. I want to pause for a moment. The one thing I don't like in politics is ingratitude. I really resent it. I understand lefties are my friends. I understand Democrats are just wrong. I understand Republicans with whom I have policy disagreements. I do not understand stabbing in the back someone who got you elected. And she stabbed Kevin McCarthy in the back. And I don't care how long she's a Republican for. I'll never forget that. I just wonder, are there other people that know that she put the knife in?
I think that the people here in South Carolina understand that her throwing bombs have consequences that are horrible for the district, right? She likes to talk about being a maverick. Being a maverick does not mean voting with the Democrats. Being a maverick does not mean killing the speaker for no reason, right? I mean, if she had then voted for maybe Jim Jordan, a more conservative, or she had a reason she could articulate, maybe people could get behind her, but she had no reason. She had no plan B. She had nothing. And then a week later, she's got the scarlet letter on and she's raising money for it. I mean, people saw straight through it. People who do and do not know Kevin McCarthy, people who do and do not understand Washington. Here, we just, you know, her antics have consequences that are bad.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of people in the knucklehead caucus. Matt Gaetz is in it. And for example, Matt ought to stay in Congress because the Joker needs a congressman, too. But he's always been who he is. He doesn't try and play both sides of the fence. He's always been Matt Gaetz, Joker. Nancy Mace fooled me. I hate being fooled. Tell me where the first district is so that the audience listening knows your geographic district.
Absolutely. It's a beautiful coastal district. It's Charleston to Hilton Head. We have ports. We have Paris Island. We are where professionals come to live when they can choose to live anywhere in the world. And so it was a wonderful place to raise my children. You know, everything here is, we're reasonable, we're sophisticated, we're serious, we want to make sure that we're not embarrassed. Oh,
I'm on Hilton Head and Myrtle Beach. I love Hilton Head, the finest beach in the world. I say Hilton Head Beach. I think it is the finest. I don't like jellyfish too much, but they're not there all that time. But I had a buddy in high school that had a house on Hilton Head. Do you have all of Hilton Head or just half of it?
All of Hilton Head, absolutely. And Isle of Palms and Sullivan's Island. I mean, it is a wonderful, it's wonderful to campaign in this district, especially in the springtime. We've got the Heritage Golf Tournament. You know, you name it, Flower Town and Festival in Somerville. This is a great place.
Well, you also need a congressperson who can get FEMA to call you back, because you guys get some storms. And I don't think anybody calls Nancy Mace back. I really, if there's a least popular congresspeople list, she's on it. And you've worked with government for a long time. Give people your bio, Catherine Templeton, so people know how you ended up here.
Thank you, Hugh. I was actually the head of the CERC. I was on the Homeland Security Commission. You know, I got a call one time from the harbor master asking me what to do about a ship coming in that they thought had Ebola. I've had to reverse 911 dams in Aiken. It is the jobs that I held for the 4 years that I worked in as Nikki Haley's in different cabinet places. She basically put me in different places to go fix it. And we did. You know, I think it's important not to just manage government, but to shrink government. So one of the things that we did, I had a 3,500 people, 100 plus locations, $600 million budget. In the first 18 months, you won't be surprised to find that I was able to cut $68 million out of it and reduce bureaucracy by 25% because there's that much waste. Right. Wow. So as a business person at US, it was easy though, right? Because it's government's so bloated. As a business person, as the president of US BRIC, every morning I just heard what you said about being hard to be a realtor, real estate agent. I watch the economy every morning because people don't build houses with bricks when they don't have any money. And so knowing the way that we are spending money in the federal government, not only the amount, but the way we're spending it, where we are putting it, being a business person and having cut that type of waste before, I really feel good about being a congressperson. I really feel good about the experience I have.
Well, Catherine Templeton, I hope you end up on the Small Business Committee. Nobody knows how to make brick. I mean, that's the first. I've been doing this a long time, since 1990. I've never had a guest who made bricks before. How in the world did you end up in the brick business?
You know, I'm a manufacturer my whole life, and there were two foreign companies that were coming together and were going to eat each other and be this huge monopoly that would be able to set prices for the housing market in America. So I went to the Department of Justice and negotiated an asset divestiture package and built it into a $100 million company with my two other partners. And importantly, it's the largest privately owned American company.
Well, you know,
company in the world.
I always have one freshman. Juan Siscomani has been my freshman this year, kind of walked me through their first year. When you win this, I think I'd like you to be that congressman who comes on once a month, because I just think someone who makes bricks, that's just, shouldn't you win just because you make bricks? Everybody needs bricks.
I think if you can make money out of dirt, you're doing pretty well.
You are. Catherine, thank you for joining me once again. Catherine Templeton, her handle on X is at Templeton, C-A-T-H. And give me the website one more time, Catherine Templeton.
Yes, sir. TempletonForCongress.com. And I look forward to seeing you every month.
I hope that's the case. Good luck to you. Take it home strong. 90 days. A lot of campaigning to go. I appreciate your being with me.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
with in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.